Okay, I'd like to tell everybody that this is a speaker meeting. We have two guest speakers. And I guess you lost, huh? Okay, the first speaker is Becky M.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Becky. I'm an addict. I have to say I'm impressed that there's this many people in a traditions meeting at 9 a.m. in the morning. Let's see. For anybody who knows me, this is, I don't know why. One thing, traditions meetings always seem to be at 9 a.m. In Portland, the traditions meeting that I did was at 9 a.m. And I don't think well before about 10:30. Somehow I seem to be doomed to doing traditions meetings at world conventions at 9 a.m. You know, when I first got clean, Narcotics Anonymous was very small. And I think that for myself and for most addicts I know that we come to believe what our experience, strength, and hope shows us is true and what we're taught. And I was taught early in my recovery that we had 24 spiritual principles, and those were the 12 steps and 12 traditions. So I never looked at them as something that only applied to service or was for those people or didn't have any interest to me. And I think mainly because my first sponsor was someone who didn't believe that they were these dry, dusty rules that get imposed on people, but believed that they were helpful. And she told me that the steps would teach me how to live with myself, and the traditions would teach me how to live with other people. And I have to tell you that that's proven to be very true for me. First 10 years of my recovery, I worked in a situation that I was totally unfamiliar with and that involved a lot of other people. And I found the traditions quite helpful in teaching me how to deal with other people. So they weren't things that just applied to Narcotics Anonymous, but were spiritual tools that I could put into practice. About 4 years ago, I got elected to a service position that part of what the description was guardian of the traditions. And I have to tell you that I panicked because I had never thought about the traditions in that way. I still don't know what guardian of the traditions means. I don't know what that means. I don't think the traditions are something that you can guard. I don't think they're rules that you can enforce. I don't think that you can make addicts do much of anything. You can share your experience, strength, and hope, and if it hits home and they believe it, I mean, in my experience at least, I'll go for it. And if it doesn't hit home and it doesn't ring true, I don't go for it. So I'm still not sure what that term guardian of the traditions means. I still believe that the traditions, if they're spiritual principles, it means that they're simple. They're not terribly complicated. And that they aren't rules. All they are is principles on which I can make decisions and I can base my decisions, but they don't give me the answers. They just give me the principle on which to look to make those decisions. Because of the service position I'm in, I see a lot of letters and I hear a lot of conversations about interpretations of the traditions and what they mean and what they don't mean, and can't you tell somebody to do this, and I don't believe anybody wins in those situations. I've never seen those battles serve our common welfare ever. That there's no I win, you lose in Narcotics Anonymous. That at least for me, you know, I'm opinionated and I'm stubborn, but somewhere, and I think the traditions lead the way, you have to leave that behind and want what's best for Narcotics Anonymous. One of the other things that I did when I got elected to that service position, and I think partly because I felt so intimidated, is I read a lot about the traditions and where they came from. and what was going on in that fellowship that we adopted them from when they were written. And everything I've read tells me that the traditions were written for the members in the groups, and that that's what they were designed for, and that's what their purpose was. And you can use the principles that are in the traditions, I believe, for anything we do in Narcotics Anonymous. But I don't believe, and it's just my own personal opinion, that you can get these strict interpretations of the tradition says this or the tradition say that. I think that the principles that the traditions are based on point us in certain directions, but I don't think they give us the ultimate answer. And maybe that's why we fight so much about them. And maybe that's why we hassle and argue. You know, rather than talking about the traditions in general, you know, I've never been to a traditions workshop that it was just all 12 traditions. And I've also, it was interesting, I was thinking when I was sitting up here, I've never been to a traditions workshop that was a speaker meeting. They've always been participation meetings, so you don't have to listen to us for very long, and everybody gets to share. But that's not what's happening this morning, so I'm just going to be fairly brief, and I'm going to do the first six and leave the last six for Floyd. Floyd's over here saying, slow down on the readings, talk a long time, Becky, it's okay. If your attention span's anything like mine at 9 a.m., it's not long. So, you know, one of the things that always makes me feel good in a meeting is when we read the beginning preamble to the traditions. You know, all of it. You know, we keep what we have only with vigilance. I've never believed that that meant that I had to go out and guard anything, but that recovery is precious, and what we have is special, and it takes care and it takes nurturing. I think for most addicts, I didn't know anything about nurturing anything myself or anyone around me, and where I've learned that is here. The first thing that I can ever remember loving absolutely was Narcotics Anonymous in my first home group. I don't think that's very sound principle, but it was the first thing that I knew that I cared about, even when I didn't like what was going on. Because with people, it took me a long time to get to that point with people, that when I disagreed with somebody or we had a problem, that I still understood that I loved you. But I understood that about Narcotics Anonymous in my first home group. And there's a part when we read, as long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than those that will tear us apart, all will be well, that that makes me feel good in every meeting. You know, I think the first tradition is the one that really gives me, for me personally, gives me the basis for what I do in NA, what I do in my home group, what I do in service, that our common welfare comes first. There is no I win, you lose. That's not a spiritual principle. If it doesn't serve our common welfare, then maybe it just doesn't need to be done. We get diverted. I know I get diverted into a lot of petty bullshit, for lack of a better word, that doesn't serve it probably doesn't serve me, and I know it doesn't serve Narcotics Anonymous, and that it was a difficult thing. I think it's more difficult today for people to understand. I'm very grateful that I got clean in NA when I did, only because it was so small that I understood that my personal recovery depended on NA Unity. Where I lived, there was not like another group across town to go to. I mean, you either dealt with and took care of your relationships and what was going on right in your own group, or there was no place else to go. And for me, when I got clean, I figured NA was the end of the line. And that I didn't have any place else to go. And since we only had one group that met a couple times a week, I couldn't burn any bridges, and I couldn't create any wreckage that I wasn't able to clean up, or I didn't have any place else to go. There wasn't another option. It wasn't that there were lots of groups and that I could pick or choose and take what I wanted and leave the rest. It was a package deal. You know, I believe today that my personal recovery does depend on NA Unity. I don't always know how to impact that. We seem to, as a fellowship, get caught up sometimes in the petty differences when what we have in common is so powerful and so... We could put all our energies into carrying the message to the addict who still suffers worldwide and still never do what we need to do. So why we spend the time on some of the stuff we do, I don't know. I know that I'm as guilty of it as anybody else. I'm as opinionated as anybody else, but it doesn't serve us. You know, it's still the basic that one addict sharing with another is without parallel, and that's what will make us okay. So I figure that the rest of the traditions get into specifics, but if I keep number 1 and number 12 in mind, that all my decisions are fairly sane. It's been interesting. The service board that I serve on has been working on the traditions portion of It Works How and Why for the last 2 years, I guess. And there's been some interesting discussions, to say the least. And what that group decided that was working on the first draft was, if they kept it, we have a board that is as varied in opinion and experience as probably any group in Narcotics Anonymous. It's also a very opinionated and vocal group, and nobody's very shy about sharing their opinions. But what they found out is when they started writing those chapters and started putting into words what they wanted to say, they kept it focused on the member in the group. And for all the varied opinions and for all the varied interpretations on that board about the specific interpretations of those traditions, that as long as it was kept focused on the member in the group, there hasn't been anything on that book that's needed to go to a vote. It's just been consensus. There's been agreement, and there's been harmony in a group that often doesn't happen with. So I think Tradition 2 has been at work in that process. Whether it produced the best product or not is not for me to judge. That's for the fellowship to judge. But I really do believe that there was a loving God at work in that process. It's one of those things that you probably have to be there to appreciate the full impact of it. But for that group to be that harmonious is a miracle. I mean, it really is a miracle. You know, Tradition 2 reminds me that whenever we get together that we can be opinionated and we can all have our own opinions and we can all be addicts, but there is an ultimate authority. There is a loving God that takes care of Narcotics Anonymous, that directs our decisions, and that loves us and takes care of us sometimes in spite of ourselves. And that if we'll all not be in a hurry, which is difficult, and be willing to hear all voices, that the right answer will come about. And that for myself, that any time I take a stand and I defend my right to be right, that doesn't happen. It can't happen. That's been a hard lesson for me to learn. I think it's one that I'm still learning. I still want to be right sometimes. And it doesn't work very well. There's not a lot of room for God when I let that happen. You know, the other thing I like about Tradition 2 is that it's the only place that I know of that very clearly states that it's a loving God that takes care of us. And whatever your own personal beliefs are about that higher power, it's loving and it's caring. And it's not out to enforce rules or dispense punishment or force us into a certain position. This is the one everybody always likes when we read them at Traditions. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. I don't know who would think that they could or would want to govern addicts. I mean, it's kind of like pushing water uphill. I don't know very many addicts who don't have some kind of an issue, or at least I'll only speak for myself, don't have some kind of an issue with authority. So to try to govern a group of opinionated, unruly addicts sounds like anarchy to me and sounds very painful. And I guess it's one of those I've never been really afraid of because I don't believe that you can force addicts to do anything. So I've never believed that we were in a big danger of having things enforced on us. I'm still not afraid of that. I'm still not afraid that there's some group that's going to run Narcotics Anonymous because I think it's impossible. Tradition 3 is one that I have my own personal opinions about, and I have my own personal experiences about. It's interesting, I remember at the last Traditions workshop I did in Portland at the World Convention, Tradition 3 was the one that everybody seemed to want to argue about. And somebody kept challenging to me to give my interpretation of Tradition 3. And it was like, why? Is this just my opinion? The thing that I'm most grateful about is that it does say that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using, because I'm one of those people who came here, I guess, with a desire to stop using. It certainly wasn't a really honest desire. I had no clean motives. I came here for all the wrong reasons. I didn't stay clean, and nobody ever asked me to leave. Unfortunately, when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous and wasn't able to stay clean, I also had a big mouth and a lot of opinions. And the group that I was in just loved me and told me to keep coming back. Today, being clean and watching other people who come in like I do that are so afraid that they think themselves from all of you or from all of us is to pick up a big stick and be loud and obnoxious, I just smile and say the same thing. That usually the most frightening people I know are the most scared. And I'm really grateful that that's all anybody said to me when I came here. And that they said, we don't care what you used, where you came from, who you are, why you're here. We don't care anything. And that's still true. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. I live in a town that's probably as diverse a community as you can live in, and I didn't move there until I was 10 years clean. And I think it says a lot for group autonomy. I live in a small city that's only 7 miles by 7 miles that has clearly defined neighborhoods. And I live in a city that has a large gay population, a large black population, a large HIV population, a large Asian population. Being white and female, I'm definitely in the minority. And the groups where I live have very different personalities. They're really different. They're more different than any place I've ever lived. And I think it adds to, where I live, I think it adds to our strength. I think the fact that meetings are so different is appealing to people, and that however you need to hear the message, if you can't hear it in one of those meetings, something's wrong. Outside of that, the longer I've stayed clean, I don't know that there's much that I can do that doesn't affect NA as a whole. That when we when somebody walks into a meeting, we speak for NA. I know walking down the street, all of us having T-shirts and buttons and stuff on, we speak for NA whether we want to or not. So I don't know how much my home group can do that doesn't affect NA as a whole in some way, in some small way. And I don't think that that's bad. I think it just means that you have to be aware and conscious that you may be the only example of Narcotics Anonymous that somebody ever sees or hears. Thank God we only have one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. You know, I hear a lot of debate about if we only have one primary purpose, it means we have other purposes. And for all the groups I've been involved with and all the service committees and boards I've been involved with, anytime we get away from that one purpose of really what can we do to better carry the message to the addict who still suffers, we get hopelessly lost in our own... It never works. You just get so encumbered in all of the opinions that you don't go anywhere. And that, again, you know, the longer I stay clean and the more I'm exposed to Narcotics Anonymous in different places, that I could spend more time and energy than I have available and still not adequately carry out that primary purpose. You know, there's a lot of addicts out there who still don't know that Narcotics Anonymous exists. We act like because recovery has become such big business and that there's commercials on TV that people know about NA. And I have to tell you that I don't believe that's true. Even in the United States, I don't believe that's necessarily true. That there's a lot of people who don't know that NA exists. And if they do, if they've ever even heard about it, they have a lot of misconceptions about who we are and what we're about. And I think sometimes we get very comfortable because we've gotten so big, but you know, I still know a lot of addicts who have some real strange ideas about NA. I worked a National AIDS conference on a PI booth last year, and all of the health professionals who run programs for mostly addicts with HIV were amazed that NA was there, because they didn't think that we wanted anything to do with people who had HIV because so many of them are on medication. That to me says that all those prison officials from all over the country and all of those doctors and nurses don't know what NA is about. And I think that we have some work to do, you know, just to let people know that we're here. Not to sell them on what NA is or is not, but just to let them know what we're about and that we're here. You know, I guess I got clean long enough ago that there weren't very many places who would even take addicts. And I still hope that little trite saying that we read, that no addict need ever die, that any addict knows that Narcotics Anonymous exists and that there is a choice. I can't make people take it, and I can't make people want it, but I can let them know that NA's here. Six, an NA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. You know, I think this one's gotten a lot tougher than when the traditions were written. You know, we've got treatment centers and we have all kinds of things that the boundaries aren't always clear, you know, and it gets tougher. And I think you have to be more careful and you have to be more clear, and it's difficult. I remember when treatment centers first started where I lived, I thought I could make them follow the traditions. They don't care what our traditions are, most of them. And if they do, they have no obligation to follow them. That's for us, not for them. You know, the last part of that is a reminder to me. I've been involved in a lot of conventions and a lot of activities that money, property, and prestige has diverted us from our primary purpose. I have been as guilty as anybody of just getting absolutely sidetracked that bigger was better, and I don't think bigger is better. That more T-shirts, more money, more fundraising isn't the answer. And somewhere that's when I've been on a number of committees that have just gotten sidetracked and lost their effectiveness because they got sidetracked on that stuff. What else do I want to say about the traditions before I turn this over to Floyd? No, I don't have another half hour. I really believe that for this addict, with suffering from the disease of addiction and probably being more aware of the way that disease impacts my life today than I ever was when I was new, that to truly make decisions and to live my life based on spiritual principles at times is very tough. And I think that's why the traditions have been tough for me sometimes, because they truly ask, at least for me, what they say to me is, Becky, you have to get out of the way. And this whole of NA, if you participate in it, will be healthy and strong and will take care of you, but it requires that your ego and your opinions and your need to be right gets put on the back shelf. And that's still something that in my own home life, in my own business, in my service commitments, and in Narcotics Anonymous is difficult for me. It's still something that I have to be really aware of, that I struggle with, and that when I practice it, I know, because life is easier. And when I don't practice it, I also know, because things get very tough. And everything seems difficult. So for me, if I remember that, I guess all will be well. And now I'm going to turn it over to Floyd.
Hello, family. I'm an addict. My name is Floyd. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. My home group is Just for the Day. It meets on Sundays, 5 p.m. Best home group in town. In the world, okay? the traditions. You know, when Becky and I were here talking, you know, it was kind of like, okay, where do we start? What do we do? You know, I really had no idea. And I just like to kind of whiplash from where she kind of left off, not starting so much with seven, but and if I tend to ramble, give me a break, okay? One of the things for me in the program of Narcotics Anonymous has been that as I learn to grow and get a better understanding of what we're talking about in our steps and traditions and other spiritual principles, that it's real difficult, although they come in a sequential order, it's real difficult to talk about one without kind of piggybacking on another, because they're all important. And as I kind of put this life, this new life, new way of living together, I kind of include, you know, all of it together, you know. One thing I am grateful for, and that is that in April, the conference okayed the 12 concepts of service, and now we can argue about something else, maybe, you know. We got a whole new field of controversy to go through, and maybe we can kind of settle down on the traditions. You know, for me, real early in my recovery, and I'm a lot like Becky, I came from Detroit, and when I started out, when I first got clean, the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous was not there, you know, and it wasn't until my third year clean, when we had our first convention, that I heard something about the traditions that really kind of set the tone of the way I view them. I heard a gentleman that a speaker say that we measure our losses in Narcotics Anonymous by buckets of blood. And from that point for Floyd, it was like I began to look at the fifth tradition, that our primary purpose must come first. Oh, that's first tradition. Right? Each group has but one primary purpose. Excuse me. And looking at it from there, you know, I begin to assume that as the direction that Floyd personally, you know, would take, you know, to get that still suffering addict into this program. And my concept of what I needed to do was that, and the way I saw it was tradition 1 through 4 led me to 5. 6 through 12 showed me how to accomplish 5. You know, I've also learned that spiritual principles have no boundaries. So I've also included, as Becky has said, the traditions into my life, you know, into everything that I try to do. You know, how well I do it, I don't know. I'm not, you know, perfect like the rest of us, although sometimes I want to think I am, you know. Sometimes I want to think I'm that ultimate authority that you talk about in the second tradition, you know what I mean, especially in service work. But I know it's not true, you know. Thank you, Becky. In doing that, it was like, how do we keep that focus? You know, and I'm a person like Becky that's been in service for some time, just about ever since I came to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I've been doing some kind of a service. And for a long time, it was like we use the traditions in our service structure, and I think they're still valid, you know, that we do. And it was real important that I kept that focus, because to me, that's what Narcotics Anonymous is all about. You know, I was talking with a couple of addicts the other day about service, and to me, if you lose that focus of our primary purpose, you know, there's no need for a service committee. Point blank to my way of thinking. You know, our PI and our H&I efforts and our literature, it's not necessarily for me. I'm here. It's for that guy that, like Becky said, that doesn't know about NA. You know, it's for that guy that's getting blown away in the streets of Detroit or HIV in New York, or, you know, struggling with getting shot in China. You know, I was reading in the paper where they just kill addicts over in China, you know. In piggybacking off of Becky and getting into the last 6 traditions, you know, starting with 7, you know, if truly our service committees are important, you know, they have to be funded. One of the things that has really disturbed me, and I think a lot of us that have been in service, is the need for conventions and fundraisers and things of this nature to supply this kind of impetus in our fellowship. If truly our primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, and if we measure our successes by what's left out, you know, I think, like Becky says, you know, is that we tend to want to look into the rooms and say, wow, look how we've grown. We're really doing a great job, but that's not the job that we do. I think we have to measure by who's still out there. I'm an addict with a utopian dream that no addict need ever die. And I believe that if we put our efforts that way, that we truly can, maybe, impossible, but that should be our hope. Yeah. So, you know, in living in that 7th tradition, which also tells me in that tradition that as an addict, you know, I was dependent on other people to satisfy me. And as a group, we demand the right to stand on our own. And I get kind of disappointed and disillusioned, I think, because I was taught when I first came into the fellowship that if it was only a dime that I had, It was all right. But it was the first thing I ever did to get out of my self-centeredness is to put that dime into a basket to help somebody else. You know, and it's kind of, you know, we've grown by leaps and bounds. And though our seven tradition has not diminished, it hasn't increased. And we're trying to do more. We're really trying to live that fifth tradition and reach out to people both across the country. And still in the United States, too, we're being honest that most of the fellowship lies. You know, there's still a lot of people, even there, even in the United States, especially in metropolitan cities, New York, Chicago, L.A., you know, and living those spiritual principles, you know. Our eighth tradition, Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And with me, with that, is that, you know, and I'm not going to approach this so much from the group level. I'm going to kind of try to approach it from a personal level and how those spiritual principles work in my life. And what I learned is in doing my eighth step and putting Narcotics Anonymous as number one on my list to become willing, because I had taken, and when I walked in here, I was still taking, and it took me a number of years to understand that I was walking in NA, and I was taking all this spiritual guidance, and I hadn't given anything to it. And this eighth tradition allowed me to become willing to give something back. I didn't have to be a doctor. I didn't have to be an attorney. All I had to do was be willing to do something to help carry this message to the still suffering addict, to do my one little part. And that was not a big demand. You know, sometimes it was as simple as picking up an ashtray, attempting to sponsor a newcomer, hugging a newcomer, sitting in on a committee meeting, being willing to even use some of my personal money instead of buying a new suit to go somewhere, you know what I mean, for the fellowship, you know, because it was my lifeblood, and understanding that. The ninth edition, NA as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those that they serve. And I think, and I, you know, I guess I'm opinionated to a degree. I try to stay away from it, but everybody has opinions, right? Again, I'm back to that fifth edition. You know, and in the view that I took in the exercises of our groups and the service committees doing this was back to reaching that addict that's still out in the street. I having sat in numerous service committees, and I hear that we're directly responsible to the area, or you're directly responsible to the groups, and my thoughts have always been, I'm directly responsible to that guy that, or girl that hasn't got here. That's who I'm directly responsible to. I'm directly responsible to do the best that I can to get to that person. And in that, the second tradition comes into play. And the first, and the third, and that's why I'm saying that they piggyback, you know. We have to be unified in that effort. We have to be unified in that concept. Not unified in going to coffee. You know, A loving God speaks through our group conscience when our conscience is directed in a loving way, when it's directed for a purpose. I think I've been to too many committee meetings where Robert's rules was the was the order of the day, you know, and we lose track of what we're really about. Our 10th tradition, Narcotics Anonymous, has no opinion on outside issues, since the NA name ought never be brought into public controversy. Boy, you know, that one has really been difficult, you know. And I think we've got something going in Narcotics Anonymous right now that kind of involves us in that. Because, you know, I've heard a lot of talk about the racial issues, this, that, and other. Maybe a problem in society. It may be an issue in society, but it should not be an issue here. You know, our readings tells us it doesn't make any difference. You know, and if you truly believe in the principles, it doesn't. If you truly believe in the fifth tradition, and if you truly believe in these traditions that are written, the 12th, about anonymity and the equalization of everybody, it's no problem. We tend to sometimes bring outside issues into the fellowship, I think. We do pretty good about keeping, you know, ourselves pretty good about, you know, not creating controversy outside with other people. But we don't do too good of a job, you know, of keeping it from inside here, bringing the outside in, you know. That saying in our basic, that trite saying, as he said, need no addict need ever die, you know, doesn't have anything to do with race, religion, sex, how much money you got, who your connections were. And that's how, at least for Floyd, that's how the spiritual principles, because when we get to the 12, it's how it begins to work in my life to allow me to not pay any attention, not to see faces so much as to see spiritual beings, you know, and seeing that everybody deserves the right to this program. Our 11th tradition, our public relations policy should be based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. You know, with that tradition, you know, a lot of us, you know, and it's very, very true, we think of basically public information. You know, I personalize that one again. You know, I can't speak for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and that has something to do, you know, with the steps for me and the spiritual way of life. When I begin to speak for the Narcotics Anonymous, all of a sudden I've become God. You know, I've put myself up beyond that humanness that I've strived for all my life. I also know that the burden of the fifth tradition is too big for any one individual. It's too big for one group. It's too big for one committee. You know, it takes all of us to speak for Narcotics Anonymous. Our message is a God-given message. And we're tools. And thank God for being a tool today. You know, I was a tool of destruction for so many years. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Our 12th tradition, the foundation of all our traditions. You know, we hear, and it's almost a cliche, principles before personalities. We say it so automatically. You know, and I know for Floyd that a long time I thought the 12th edition simply meant who you see here and what you see here, what is said here, let it stay here. I thought it was real, real, you know. And then I began to really rehash in my mind as I've stayed around the program what anonymity truly meant. In our basic text, it speaks of bearing no name, and which is a good explanation. But I begin to even research even deeper in the recesses of my mind and heart as to what it was, you know. And I found, Floyd, that it meant the equalization of us all. That if that was my foundation, and I'm part of a group, okay? And everyone in the group, me individually, everyone in the group, and then if we extend it to the service structure, everyone in the service structure, truly live that principle.
For the conclusion of this presentation, please turn your cassette over and depress the play button. Do not rewind your cassette.
All the traditions to work. All of a sudden, I'm unified because I'm no better than, no less than. I can hear when there's a decision to be made, I can hear everybody's voice on that particular subject without my own personal prejudices, my own personal opinion, you know. I think the personality for Floyd that had to be placed behind the principle was my own. Most of the time, it was my personality that was in the way of the principle, not yours. I wanted to run around and say, that strong personality manipulating, but it was me that was shutting you off, forming an opinion, before it came out of your mouth, so that whatever you said, I was negative on anyhow. I never could hear what you were saying. So I never could judge fairly to come to a good conclusion on what we were talking about. Yeah. I think our traditions, like Becky was saying, we keep them with vigilance. And I don't know if that means watching over as much as searching yourself. You know, when I first came to the program, and I said, oh man, vigilance. I went found a dictionary definition and says watching, you know, like a guard dog or something like that. You know what I mean? And oh boy, hey, you broke a tradition there. You know, hey, you know, I was really gonna watch him. You know, and as I've gone along, I found that it's more watching Floyd that I can fall into these kind of traps so easily. I can let property and prestige divert me so quickly. Not only when I'm doing service work, but also just with me alone. You know, I can get off into wanting to be the guy that everybody looks up to, you know. And in that effort, a lot of times, you know, just forget what my primary purpose is for being here, that I'm an addict. I want to be something else. You know? And I think sometimes the groups are capable. I think sometimes our ASCs and our regionals are capable of doing that. You know, we're capable of neglecting our fourth tradition and not consider the outcome of what we think, not thinking the whole thing out and how it affects Narcotics Anonymous as a whole, and easily get diverted into money, property, and prestige. You know, failure to consider others. And for a person, in my personal recovery, that tradition taught me specifically, you know, and I'm kind of coupling the fourth and the sixth, of what I was, you know. I had no consideration for other people when I was using. And I brought that in here with me. I never thought about, well, if I do this, how's my mother going to feel? What's going to happen to my kids? I use, man, if it was the last dime. And I practiced that kind of stuff for over 20 years. And the prestige I sought was with the guys out in the street. The end result is I lost family. You know, I never became the type of person that I thought I was going to be when I was that little boy. And the pain of that kept me using. And I was caught in that vicious cycle. And so often we as groups can act the same way. It kind of amazes me that most of us have been here long enough to have done some reading, you know. And one of the things that I begin to learn is that we as a group can act as an individual. I mean, when I was using, I hung out on the corner with a bunch of guys, and we rationalized a bunch of garbage that said we were doing the right thing. And in our little circle, we really believed that. We thought everybody else was crazy. You know, them guys we ran around called squares and stuff that went to work on a day-to-day basis and raised their families, and, you know, and we'd see when I'm in a new big car and say, that square, get that stuff. You know what I mean? He ain't got no business with it. You know, and we come here and we can do the same thing as a group. We can act as one and rationalize the most outrageous sort of nonsense. We can fail to consider the consequences of our actions and affect other groups. We can get diverted and want to become prestigious. We can forget that we're equal to, not better than, and strive for better than, rather than equal to. We forget the unity, and God is gone out of our conscience. You know, the second tradition I've shared several times on that, and to me, I've never truly saw a group conscience that was truly wrong. And people say, well, wow, what are you talking about? Because I've learned, at least from my observation, that even in mistakes, a loving God comes in and we learn from the mistake. I think the difference is that when we truly allow a loving God to come in, that we don't go through the pain. We have a choice. It's just like in my personal recovery. You know, if I rigidly work my 10th step and look at what I'm coming, what I'm doing, I can avoid the pain. But a lot of times in our groups and in our areas and in our regional meetings, we don't look at the pain. We just jump off into it, and it causes all kind of pain for a lot of people. Oh wow, I got a long way to go. Yeah, oh man. Let me continue. I kind of lost my train of thought there. A lot of us, you know, for me, again, the traditions. Let me say this. I've heard the traditions like, okay, they're nothing. But without the tradition, and I think a lot of people don't think of this, Without the traditions, there could be no fellowship. If we did not have our traditions, we could not sit in this room together. We could not come together for our common purpose of recovery. Our common welfare would not come first. Everybody, I mean, I probably would have charged you guys at least $5 to hear me say something, you know. You know, at a minimum, at least, you know. My good friend Alan over there, I probably would have charged $25 or $30 because I know he's... But in our effort to keep them, I think there's one thing that we need to really truly keep in mind. And that is, it's time, I think, for the fellowship and for those of us that are in service to quit killing each other. You know, and it's taken me a long time to learn that, to quit beating each other to death, to look at our 12th tradition. Because when I look at that tradition and I see the equalness of us, and I know my vulnerability, I know my weaknesses, I know the mistakes that I'm capable of making and do make on a regular basis, I know my own personal sensitivity. It took me a long time to find that out, that I was a very sensitive person. You know, and I can see the sensitivity of others. At least I try. I don't know how well I do it, but I do try. I'm more aware of it today through trying to practice the 12th tradition. And I try not to beat to death the next person. I try to understand today that all of us have that ability to be ran out of this program at some point in your recovery. And you don't want to see anybody leave, because we still measure our successes by the persons we bring in and our losses in buckets of blood. There's still people dying out there. Through our unified efforts, we can reach. A lot of people. Through our unified efforts, we can make the name Narcotics Anonymous known. You know, I'm a person that, a lot of people that came up from Michigan were telling me that some of them got stopped crossing the border when they told them they were going to a Narcotics Anonymous convention. And the thought that hit my mind is that other fellowship would not have that problem. So I don't care how many numbers we got, until a person works, opens a book and says NA and knows what it is, we haven't done our job. We cannot rest on our laurels. And that's my feeling. That's for me. When that name becomes as familiar as the other fellowship's name. Because you can walk out to any stranger on the street and ask him about that other fellowship, and he'll tell you precisely what it was, what it is. But if you tell him about ours, I've tested it with some of the cab drivers here. They don't have the slightest idea. Not the foggiest notion, you know. Some of the guys was telling me that they pulled them over and went through their cars with a fine-tooth comb, you know, figuring that they was holding. You know, what do you mean, narcotics? Oh my God! You know, so and in that, you know, as Becky said. We represent Narcotics Anonymous everywhere we go. We're slowly building a very good reputation. We're slowly building a very good name. But it takes all of us. It takes all of us to walk down the street and not be rowdy. It takes us coming to conventions and not trashing the hotel. It takes us obeying the rules where it says no smoking, don't smoke. And I'm a smoker. It takes all that kind of stuff for us. When we do things contrary to what's legally right, we open the fellowship up for controversy. You know, controversy comes in so many ways, and I think we don't think of it. You know, we don't want to leave the hotel. What I'm saying, those were a bunch of guys, people. I'm using the word guys, saying those were a bunch of people that were rowdy, didn't pay attention to what was going on, stole all the damn towels, took the ashtrays, and trashed the hotel. We stay away from outside controversy by doing the things that, and practicing the principles that are learned in these traditions. You know, allowing that loving God to speak in our group conscious, the conscious says that we've changed our way of life. That's the conscious of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, that we don't use today, that we're productive, responsible members of society. That's the conscious of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, it's a broader conscious than that one little group that we sit in, you know. A comment on the third tradition, and then how much longer I gotta go here? How many? on the third, 45 seconds. Okay, great. I could make one little comment on the third tradition, and that deals with the fifth and the 12th and all the rest of them, and that is in the third tradition. It says somewhere that membership is not automatic. And I was thinking when Becky was sitting there, I remember when I came around, you know, they changed that. It used to say an honest desire, you know. And I used to have, well, I still get kind of mixed emotions about that. But I do think it takes an honest, I don't think it takes a, it's a requirement to become a member to have an honest desire. But I think that somewhere, when you become a member, when you actually become a member and participate, and that's what I gauge my membership on, my participation, that I had found that honest desire. When I got off the fence and decided that this was home, I made a commitment to this program and this program alone, I had found the honest desire to stay clean. And I had no problem with putting my money in the basket. I had no problem with being a part of and doing my fair share. I had no problem with trying to carry the message. When that happened, I can't say. I'm just trying to leave a thought. For me, my life has gotten better when I begin to live up to the requirement and of the third tradition and became a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And thank you for letting me share.
Okay, I'd like to thank Becky and Floyd for sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Oh, that's done. Now we need to close with the Serenity Prayer.